It's all here.
A no-hitter, grand slam.
Have all the fun you want.
Every moment, every game.
Make sure you guys tune in.
Catch the White Sox only on NBC Sports Chicago.
This is the Bulls Talk Podcast presented by Coors Light. I'm Casey Johnson, joined today by my NBC Sports Chicago teammates, Rob Schaefer and Tony Gill. Coming up on the show, we are going to break down the Eastern Conference and see where the Bulls rank heading into the 2021-2022 season. We will also offer up our predictions for the second round of the NBA playoffs.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Born in the Rockies, Coors Light is lagered cold for a crisp, clean taste. Filtered cold to ensure clarity and brightness. And packaged cold for peak refreshment. Because those who thirst for more deserve the world's most refreshing beer.
How many Bulls fans have you guys seen on Twitter just trash LeBron for losing in the first round?
I didn't see that much. Dice saw it enough that he had Rob write something on it, but I didn't see it as much. Did you see it a lot?
I did. Me? Yeah, but people hate LeBron, so Rob, you saw a lot.
I don't know, man. 14-1 is still pretty damn good.
That's how many finals in a row?
Right.
At one point.
Isn't it weird how that has worked against
in this
you?
One, I mean, I'm...
What?
Like, just going to the finals so many times has worked against him.
Yeah. How many times did he go in a row? Eight? Nine?
It
was eight.
Yeah.
I think it was eight because the ones that he's been to 10 and the ones that weren't in a row would have been 07. And the Lakers won. So
we only do that for him, right? Where it's like, you went too many times.
But the Lakers won when they won. No. Yeah. And the other thing is, like, I don't know. I'm not like the biggest LeBron defender necessarily because I don't, you know, I try not to like overly defend or overly support any one player. But like the nuance of all of his different finals appearances is like, there's really only one that I'm going to put on him as if as if he had the better team going in and it's really unacceptable that he lost, and that's the Dallas one. That to me is like the biggest stain that he'll never be able to scrub off the reputation when you do kind of the all-time conversation stuff. And when I say the all-time conversation stuff, I mean like the thing that's going to stop him from being one or two, you know, like we're still talking about a top five guy all time. So you're picking hairs when you get that high. But like think about like if you really break down each one that he went to, like which one did you want him to win that he didn't? Like 07, that ragtag Cavs team against the Spurs. Like, I don't know if I'm going to kill him for not winning that one. How old was he when he went to that finals? Am I going to kill him for not winning that one?
Like
am I going to kill him for
24, 25 or something like that?
Yeah. Am I going to kill him for splitting two with that Spurs team in 13 and 14? Like, no. Am I going to kill him for losing any of the Durant Warriors ones? I can't believe he won the one, the 3-1 one that he did. And then what, the first Warriors one, he's playing without Kyrie and Kevin Love. Like, I don't know. Maybe I am a LeBron guy. And even this first round series, like, I don't know. I wouldn't have done the whole, like, if the Lakers won, I would have presented the nuance of, all right, well, Chris Paul was battling through injury the whole time. Now that the Lakers won, I think it's appropriate to be like, well, you know, if Anthony Davis doesn't miss the last 2.5 games of that series, is it different? But I don't know.
All right.
I also picked the Lakers, full disclosure, and I'm apparently still salty about it.
And I picked the Suns. That's why he's even more mad, because I picked the Suns. But we're not gonna do a LeBron podcast today. Sorry, listeners. What we are gonna do, we are gonna kind of dive into the NBA playoffs. And welcome into the Bulls Talk podcast. We're flying without our fearless host and leader Jason Goff again today, but I am pleased to be joined by my NBC Sports Chicago teammates, Rob Schaefer and Tony Gill. And I don't know about you guys, but watching these NBA playoffs, it's always entertaining and interesting to watch the NBA playoffs. And what's jumping out to me is just the disparity between, you know, where the playoffs are going and where the Bulls are. The Bulls have a long way to go. And, you know, I think we all kind of have agreed on this podcast that there's some optimism and certainly some foundation being built with the big swing that management took at the trade deadline, adding a second all-star Nikola Vucevic to Zach LaVine. So it's playoffs or bust next season for the Bulls. And along those lines, that means they need to jump some teams. They need to supplant some teams that are currently in the playoff picture. So I thought we'd break down the Eastern Conference, kind of go team by team, probably not spend a lot of time on some of these teams, but just to see where, you know, they're looking for 21-22. I hope we're all in agreement that the Nets, Bucks, 76ers, and I would even throw the Hawks in there, given their trajectory. We're not going to spend any time on, because, you know, if the Bulls are catching them, God bless them, because then they're in the probably battling for home court advantage. But we kind of – and I also, while we're talking groupings here, I would also take the Pistons, Magic, and Cavaliers out of the conversation, mm-hmm. because if the Bulls are in that neighborhood, then we're probably having a podcast about a different topic, as in firings next season. And I do think the Cavs actually are going to make a jump. I like the Cavs. I kind of like what they're trying to do, but they have a long way to go. So we're going to focus on those, remaining seven teams, which is Charlotte, Indiana, Washington, Boston, Miami, Knicks, and the Raptors. And just kind of break down who of those seven teams we can see the Bulls jumping to get into the playoffs. So, Rob, why don't you pick one of those seven and we can maybe bat it back and forth and go alternate here.
Yeah, let's start at the bottom with the team that the Bulls don't have to jump, right? They have to stay in front of in Toronto, who finished 27-45 this season, four games back of the Bulls. The way I was jotting notes down quickly on this before we started, I kind of broke it down into what's the case that the Bulls would jump or stay in front of this team, and what's the case for the Bulls not being able to do that. The case of the Raptors is actually, I think their roster is a lot better than that 27-45 record this season. As we're going to talk about with a lot of these teams, they kind of had the season from hell with having to play in Tampa and dealing with COVID stuff, dealing with injury stuff. They clawed their way to 500 midway through the season, and then they end just very unfortunately, and then it kind of spirals into a tank situation. So I think the case for them jumping the Bulls and kind of reasserting themselves in the playoff picture in the East is a decent one. You know, say OG Anunoby makes another leap. Chris Boucher, they've got a couple nice developmental pieces headlined by him. Say he keeps developing. Siakam, Fred VanVleet, that's a nice core that's battle-tested. Obviously, they've won a championship with most of the principals of that team, with Kawhi Leonard gone, obviously. I believe they could be a cap space team this offseason if they want to be. So maybe they're in the running for somebody who can help them next year there. Obviously, they did a really wonderful job of maximizing where their draft pick or their lottery position is this year. So they're in the seventh slot. If they make a jump into the top four, anybody who's in the top four this year is going to get an impact guy, possibly immediately. So maybe that helps them for next year, too. The case against it, though, is, you know, Kyle Lowry, obviously an unrestricted free agent this offseason. If he's on his way out and you lose him for nothing, where does that leave you? Masai Ujiri, his contract expired this season, and he still is not extended. I'm not plugged into the Raptors organization, and I actually don't know what like the latest reports on that are. So I don't know what the status of that is, but with, you know, one of the more accomplished executives in the league, and you just don't know if he's going to be back next year. There's some instability there. Obviously they have a top five coach, I would say, Nick Nurse. So you'd have confidence there. And then, you know, the drafting, if they don't end up in the top four or five, maybe they don't end up getting that impact guy. I think the Raptors are an interesting case either way. I could see it going either way. I didn't make a lot of these guys, Casey, we'll go back and forth, but a lot of these teams, I didn't end up getting to a final conclusion of, you know, whether I would see the Bulls jumping them or not. But, I think the Raptors are going to be a tough one. If you want to get into the top six, which is where I would place the expectations for the Bulls next year based on, kind of the status of everything right now. So that's where I'd start with the Raptors. From there, we can go up to the Hornets, unless you have thoughts on anything I just kind of laid out there with Toronto.
I would just quickly add, because I don't want to spend too much time on each team because we got a bunch to get to, but I would just quickly add, I'm probably not as high on Siakam as you as a main focal point. And obviously the Lowry situation, you know, the expectation is he's probably headed elsewhere. So that will significantly weakened them. So I personally see them maybe as a team that the Bulls can well, they already are ahead of them. Like you said, they don't have to jump them, but I can see the Bulls finishing ahead of them again next season. So I would count that as one in the Bulls' favor. But yeah, we can move on to Charlotte now.
Yeah. Yeah, so Charlotte, I did the same thing. Case four against. Case for the Bulls, or they finished ahead of the Bulls, obviously 33 and 39 this year, two games in front. You get a year two jump from LaMelo. You get Hayward back. He missed 21 games this year. Who knows if you can count on him to stay healthy. They've got some nice pieces. PJ Washington, Terry Rozier made a jump last year. Miles Bridges, Devontae Graham, who knows if he'll be back. But he's a nice piece. And James Borrego, really nice up-and-coming head coach that they just extended. And they'll be a cap space team this offseason too, so they can make an impact addition. The Hornets are a team I could easily see the Bulls jumping, because I think by the end of this year, they were actually – I thought the Bulls were a better team than them. They would have been better equipped to compete in the play-in, but it was just a matter of the Hornets started the season so hot that they were in a better position. The case against them would just be that, you know, maybe this end-of-season swoon that they went on is closer to reality and they were playing a little bit over their heads. And, yeah, I just think, you know, if the Bulls and the Hornets played for that last playing spot in the last game of the season, I think I would have picked the Bulls. So that one could also go either way, but I would feel decent about the Bulls being able to jump them. Now they're in 10th, so that wouldn't get them all the way there, but that is one team that I would feel decent about predicting for next season, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah, we're in agreement there on that one. I'm not sold on Hayward's ability to stay healthy. I mean, his track record is his track record at this point. You know, if the Charlotte's, and look, the Bulls own Charlotte this year. I mean, they had their number pretty handily and easily. So, you know, I can see the Bulls finishing ahead of Charlotte next year. If the opposite is true, LaMelo Ball is even better than we think he can be, because that's him. That to me would be speaking to him taking a huge jump in year two. Devontae Graham is a big key there. To keep him, he's restricted. He's turned into a pretty nice player for them. He's kind of their main free agent that I think that they got to take care of. I see the Bulls finishing ahead of them. So I'm two for two. Well, they already have finished ahead of Toronto. So
I'd say we've gotten up to 10th at this point.
But according to KC's prediction, the Bulls get weakened by not having Daniel Tice and the Charlotte Hornets picking up Daniel Tice.
Oh, see, I forgot about that one.
That's a good point. Oh, I was going to say the center hole with that with the cap space thing that I briefly mentioned. If they plug that center hole in a meaningful way, it can make a huge difference for them.
Yeah, I forgot. I've written in a mailbag that's kind of some gossip, early gossip you're hearing about free agency, is that Charlotte's a team that may show some interest in Daniel Tice. So, but is Daniel Tice that much of a difference maker? I think not. So I got the Bulls finished. So we're in the play-in territory. Congratulations, Bulls. You've graduated to the 2022 play-in tournament. But next up is the Pacers. Washington.
I think the Pacers technically finished in that ninth spot.
Oh, yeah.
34 and 38, although they do have the same record as the Wizards. I mean, the case for them jumping the Pacers is pretty simple, right? If things get blown up, not only from the head coach perspective with Nate Bjorkgren, and I know they haven't made a decision on him yet, or at least as of the end of season press conferences, that's what was being said publicly. I think there's also with Pritchard kind of a question too. I think I didn't watch these press conferences in their entirety, but I saw tweets trickling out from the Pacers people that I follow saying kind of the talk from Pritchard was, hey, you know, we have to make a decision on Bjorkgren, but I think I'm still being evaluated too. So the case for them is kind of that gets overhauled. Maybe they break up the Sabonis Turner that's been talked about for years. Maybe that happens this offseason. There's a little bit of a roster breakup there. I mean, but the case that they kind of stick in this spot in the East that they seem to have been for the last, you know, decade is that they are as steady a bet to make the playoffs as any team in the conference year over year. TJ Warren missed most of last year. Maybe things look differently with him. And honestly, they were still a decent team for the regular season, even amid kind of all that chaos that kind of came to fruition at the end of the season. I could very easily see the Bulls jumping them if things get blown up and they take a step back just to, you know, maybe try a quick turnaround rebuild or maybe a deeper rebuild or something like that. But this is another team that the Bulls kind of had their number last year. So it just, you know, from our perspective, having watched all those games, it makes it easier to envision. I don't think it's a slam dunk, but I wouldn't feel terrible betting on that either, actually.
And then their main free agents are of note are TJ McConnell and Doug McDermott, both unrestricted. And, you know, not really move the needle guys, but both had really solid seasons, and you know, Doug's finally found the right niche and role for him, and shot a nice clip the last couple of years. I've always been a TJ McConnell fan. I've probably overvalued him because I'm such a fan. I just think he's one of those guys who does a lot of things well that make your team better. We've kind of kicked around him possibly being on the Bulls radar, totally my speculation, but I mean, it's just in terms of fit in a three guard rotation. So those are free agents of note. You know, I think you make a good point about the Turner Sabonis pairing, because I was supposed to kind of be probably leading to a little bit more fruition than has transpired. Turner's had trouble staying on the court at times, both with foul trouble and injuries. So where do you kind of stand on that pairing before we move on to the Wizards?
I don't know. Just not being, you know, plugged in or embedded with the Pacers. I'm not sure what to make of, you know, which one I would pick between the two necessarily, or what schematically has made the most sense for them.
The one that I just will say when.
Yeah, it's true, but it's also a matter of like what package are you going to get that's going to maximize? Like maybe you're not sold on any piece on the team and you're just looking to strip the parts completely and rebuild the asset chest or whatever. So I don't know what direction I would go in terms of, do you trade them both? Do you keep one? I just know when something, even from the outside, it kind of like you can tell when something has kind of run its course, and it kind of feels that way with Indiana. There's a little bit of a fatigue, especially with all the management and coaching staff stuff this year. So that was a bit of informed speculation, but I feel like there's a solid chance that happens this offseason. I'm actually not sure. I should have looked this up before we started, what the contract situations of each of them are too, because that also contributes to what package you could look at getting for.
But
something about that just feels like it's run its course.
I mean, I think it feels like that because they all hated the coach. I mean, that's we saw it happen in Atlanta where they fired the guy that the players hated, and now they are one up on the number one seed in the East. So I don't know what that team looks like if all the players are bought in into a guy that they actually want to play for. But it doesn't seem like Indiana is – I mean, if they were going to fire him, they would have fired him already, and they haven't fired him. So I don't know what's going on there. I think it depends on – that as more of the management coaching aspect, not really, because I think Indiana's team is actually pretty decent. I think I would take their roster without, you know, coaching or anything, just the players on it. I think I might take it over the Bulls if like gun to my head. But I really like Sabonis. I really like what he does. I really like what Miles Turner does. But again, they didn't play well together under this coach, so I don't know what that looks like next year.
And I'll tell you what, getting Warren back after missing the whole season, he was really coming into his own in the bubble last year, and I really like him. Obviously they bring in LeVert and he finds his footing towards the end of the season, you know, full off season for him, and Brogdon, of course, who, you know, can he stay on the floor?
Yeah, there's
one question, but nobody questions his ability when he does. The thing quickly I want to say, because I did look up the contracts on Sabonis and Turner, and I forgot about that, but these extensions were actually signed pretty recently. Sabonis is under contract for 18-19 a year through 2024, and Turner through 2023 at 17.5. So those are two for what they are, and especially Sabonis, who, like you said, Tony, I like a little bit more because the all-star pedigree and kind of just his skill set is a little bit more varied. Those are really, really good contracts to have those two guys on, so it'd be interesting to see what they do.
And also, Tony, I'm going to call you on the players hating Lloyd Pierce. I'm not sure so much they hated him. I think sometimes there's some frustration over usage. I know Trae Young and he butted heads a little bit, but no one hates Lloyd Pierce. He's like all that's good about the NBA. Man. I'm going to call you on that one, man.
I mean, that's fine. I'm not an insider, reckless speculation, but I mean, that was a pretty big turnaround where they were like one of the worst teams in the league. No. And now where they are, it's like every game and every round that they win is just like Lloyd Pierce just looks worse and worse, because it's like, dude, you had this and you fumbled the bag.
Yeah,
no doubt. Let's move on to the Wizards. I'm going to start this one because Rob, you've kind of taken the start on some of the other ones. Arguably the hottest team, or one of the hottest teams in the league, is as the regular season concluded. There's still, despite that, remains, you know, some speculation about Scott Brooks' future. Tommy Shepard has said that he has not made a full determination on his future. Russell Westbrook obviously has endorsed for Brooks to return, which certainly has to hold some sway. So we'll see how that coaching situation plays out. And that's the thing about this exercise. I mean, obviously we're in June here, and you know, kicking stuff about around for different ideas. But we also don't know, you know, there are coaching situations that are unresolved. There are rosters that are going to be changed, but it's still a fun little exercise to do. There are free agents of note. Shout out to Robin Lopez, one of the all-time greats, unrestricted. Alex Len. So their big man depth could and probably will take a hit. Daniel Gafford, your ticket is ready for your upgrade in role next year. Ish Smith, another guy I would put in the TJ McConnell, not that they're similar players, but just one of those players I've always really liked, who's just one of those guys who seems to really impact games and play his role well. He's unrestricted. So, but again, you know, obviously this is a team that's built on its backcourt, and that backcourt's, from my estimation, not going anywhere. Depending on what happens with the coaching situation, I can see the Wizards kind of being in that 7, 8, 9, 10 range again next season. So this is one of those teams that if the Bulls catch it, you know, things are going well. If they don't, you know, the roster changes that Mark Eversley and Arturis Karnišovas are going to make this offseason have not panned out. So that's going to be an intriguing one, because this team, to me, their talent always kind of exceeded the start that they had to the 2021 season.
Yeah, a fair amount for them. Going to depend on the young guys too. Like Rui Hachimura had a strong close to the season. Sure. Liked what I saw from him in the playoffs. Denny Avdija missed a lot of the last year, but that's obviously their, you know, first round top 10 pick from last year. Thomas Bryant, I think people forget about him. He was their starting center at the beginning of the year and the guy that they were very high on. He missed basically the entire season. So, you know, they've got young guys that it's going to depend on how they continue to develop. But what you said about the backcourt, Casey, is as long as Bradley Beal is committed to be there, and by all accounts he seems to be, they're going to be in, you know, operating with a motivation to win now. So they're not a team that's going to necessarily go anywhere, regardless of what you think of the roster. They're going to be making aggressive moves to try to compete and contend. I think of them and the Bulls as kind of roughly on the same plane, kind of heading into next season, at least as of right now. I mean, there's a ton that's going to change over the course of the offseason. You know, the one hold to poke is like that Bertans contract. I don't know that there's evidence that they're going to like try to do anything about that, but that's just a piece of mismanagement that could hamper them kind of going forward.
But he came on at the end. I mean, he got off to a horrible start. I mean, he kind of became who he is. I mean, yes, that you overpay, shooting's always at a premium, but you know, it's not like he was bad at the end of the season. He was bad at the start of the season. You know?
No doubt about that. And it doesn't really have any bearing on their offseason necessarily. Right. Just a note on the
end. Is it bad that I thought him and Kevin Herter was the same person?
That's crazy.
What? Oh, so you know, are you saying all of us white guys look alike? Is that what you're saying?
Red hair.
One's got red hair.
Yeah. I think Bertans is like a strawberry blonde type. They could be massively different sized brothers, I suppose.
All right, we're going to move on to the Celtics, and since this is Rob's, you know, he's still got Celtics posters all over his bedroom, we're going to let him take this one. Obviously, a team in flux with a coaching change and a managerial change. So what say you for your Celtics, Rob?
Well, I'm just curious, because I think, you know, obviously Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown is about as good a place to start foundationally as any. So, you know, they have, like I was saying with the Raptors earlier, they kind of had a season from hell too, with like COVID days lost and injuries and obviously like a talent drain on the roster. So, you know, for this season to be a worst case scenario for them, and they still finished five games in front of the Bulls, and you know, a lot of things went wrong for the Bulls this season too. This is where I start to become a little bit more skeptical about the Bulls jumping these teams, but it certainly isn't out of the realm of possibility. The questions for Boston for me are, one, they just have a lot of things that they're going to have to get creative with on the roster. Marcus Smart's entering an expiring year. Is that a guy that they look to move? What do you do with Kemba Walker at this point? Like, do you ride it out and hope that a full offseason he can get some of his juice back? Or is that someone you look to move? What the heck is Rob Williams? I believe he's extension eligible this offseason. What's the situation with that? And then the biggest picture questions are, is the next coach that they find going to be a better coach than Brad Stevens? And is Brad Stevens going to be a better lead executive than Danny Ainge? And I think until you know the answers to those two things, I don't really know where the Celtics are going to settle. Are they going to make win now moves to try to refine their kind of Eastern Conference finalists or second round of the Eastern Conference playoffs type form? Or do they take a step back and try to, you know, build back better or whatever for the future? I don't know, but I think That's a tough one. It certainly wouldn't put it out of the realm of possibility that the Bulls jump them, but just when you start with Tatum and Brown, just with how battle-tested they are, I'm a little skeptical, but I'll be watching closely. This is going to be a much easier conversation to have with the Celtics when we see, first of all, what coach they hire and how they handle, you know, the draft and free agency and things like that.
I can't believe you did a whole Celtics scouting report and didn't mention that Luke Kornet's an unrestricted free agent. But but Evan Fournier, you didn't also mention him.
That's a big one. Yeah.
That's a big one. And that he's unrestricted as well. I actually have not seen much speculation about his future. What's your feeling on the Celtics commitment?
I haven't seen much either. The one thing that I would say that would inform kind of how I think about their offseason is that they made that Tice trade, right, to get under the luxury tax line. If the position of ownership there, or if they're operating in a mentality where they don't want to be deep into the tax to pay for a 500 team, that could restrict what they do. And I think that's kind of why I'm very curious to see what the moves they make this offseason are. Are they in a position where they're willing to go into the tax to build a team that they just feel better about this year? Or are they going to keep kind of skirting that line and trying to play around it and, you know, eventually build back in a year or two with a team that's going to contend at a high level with Tatum and Brown? I just don't know. But Fournier would be interesting. They didn't give up, they give like 2 seconds or something for him at the deadline. So it wouldn't be the biggest, sunk cost to lose him for nothing. But he was a guy that I think once he got back from his COVID bout, actually looked decent for them. I mean, he's always been a great shooter and scorer. So that's something that any team
could
use. But yeah, he's one that I don't really have a handle on.
Trade
for Damian Lillard.
Jaylen Brown and all the picks.
Mm-hmm.
That's about as good. Is there a better package out there? I don't know. I mean, I'm sure there is. But that'd be interesting. That's just another situation where it's like, what do you have around Lillard and Tatum? But if they got in that chase, I mean, that would obviously change their projection. No doubt about that.
All right, we got two teams left. We got to go on to the Heat, which, you talk about a summer that – there could be some change. I mean, they've got a ton of contract situations that are up in the air, and as competitive, legendarily competitive and aggressive of an elite exec out there in Pat Riley, obviously. So you're obviously building around Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo. But they're going to be a team in flux this summer. I mean, the Oladipo situation is just the tip of the iceberg. But look, similar to me, it's similar to the Celtics in the sense that your two building blocks, no disrespect to Levine and Vucevic, but in Boston, you've got Tatum and Brown. I think most observers would say that's probably a little bit better tandem to start with. And, Butler, even though he's, getting a little bit longer in the tooth, and Bam are as solid of a foundation in terms of a two-man game as, as there is, maybe not as there is, but a pretty solid one. So what's your take on the Heat, Rob?
Well, think about Jimmy. I mean, you could say he's, going to turn 32 this offseason, but, and that he, underperformed in the playoffs, but he's coming off a season where he was 21-7, I think led the league in steals per game. And, basically just had when he was playing. I mean, obviously there were things that made him miss time, but he's had one of the best regular seasons of his career. So I don't necessarily think there are indications that Jimmy is slowing down. Obviously, Bam is still on the ascent. And think about Miami. I mean, they position themselves to have flexibility if they wanted to get into the free agent sweepstakes. I think they were thinking that a guy like Giannis might be there, and that's the play that they would make.
Right.
Obviously, that's not happening anymore. But who knows with Giannis specifically, but who knows, if there are other big fish out there that they want to hunt. Maybe they're a Lillard team. Maybe they're, I guess the Kawhi thing probably lost some steam now that they've won a series. And I never thought that it had much smoke behind it anyway, just because, he wanted to be in LA so badly, going down a rabbit hole there. But, the point about the Heat is that they can never be counted out as making those type of big moves. Kyle Lowry is a name I should have mentioned because they were reportedly on him at the deadline. So between Jimmy and Bam, which is obviously as good a foundation as you could ask for, given their situation. And then I think they'll have avenues to improve pretty dramatically. You'd have to hope that Harrow bounces back after regressing a little bit this year and on down the line there. This team, Miami, I think they're in obviously a little bit better position than Boston, but I think of them both as kind of the fringe of, it would be tough for me to see the Bulls finishing ahead of them this year, or at least I wouldn't feel confident betting on it. Whereas I might for teams at the earlier part of this conversation, your Charlottes, your Indianas, your Washingtons, just because Miami, like a lot of these other teams are going to be in a position to want to make moves to win now, and they're super well positioned to do it from a roster standpoint at this point. And there will be names out there that could slot in nicely and help them out.
So, you know, the funny thing is, it's kind of fitting that we're closing with the Heat and the Knicks, because those are two teams you expect to look significantly different next season. And quite frankly, the Bulls are going to look significantly different next season. I mean, this is a chance for Arturis and Mark and their staff to really change the roster. They've got a ton of roster spots potentially available. That's the excitement about this offseason. If you're a Bulls fan, is that, you know, they have an opportunity to really kind of start to shape this roster in management's preferred vision. But closing with the Knicks, I would argue that there's probably no team in better position going into this offseason, or few teams in better position going into this offseason than the Knicks, who overachieved with a top four seed, disappointing playoff performance, but ton of cap space. The allure of the New York and Madison Square Garden, a respected team president, even though he's new to the role, given his agency ties and Leon Rose. And then a coach that I think, quite frankly, often gets kind of mislabeled as someone who players don't want to play for. I think players that want to be coached love playing for Tom Thibodeau, because they know that he makes them better and that he maxes them out. And Julius Randle would just be the latest example of that. So they've got a ton of their own free agents. I think really the only ones of interest, well, Mitchell Robinson is a team option. I assume that's going to be picked up with a heartbeat, right? I mean, and the only one that the main one of interest to me is Derrick Rose, who, you know, if he fits and there's a situation for him to be back, given his ties to Thibodeau, will be back. And Nerlens Noel, that's always been a top guy and played well for them this year. Taj, probably expendable if the right situation comes along, but they got a ton of cap space and a lot to sell. So I do not see the Bulls jumping the Knicks. What say you, Rob?
The only thing you can hope for if you're the Bulls is that they whiff on their kind of grander free agent plans or designs, and that, you know, the only thing you hope for, I'm not saying this is true, but this is the thing you hope for if you're a Bulls fan or the Bulls, is that they played a little bit over their head this year and that things kind of come back to earth next season. I don't know that's going to be true. And even if it was, this is a team that finished 10 games ahead of the Bulls this year. So it's a big leap to make. I agree with you. I mean, I think, you know, there are a couple teams better positioned than the Knicks heading into the offseason, just, you know, teams that already, you know, have more talent on the roster or anything like that. But in relation to the Bulls, yeah, I think that little bracket right there of the Knicks, the Hawks, the Heat, the Celtics, maybe in that order, are tough. I guess maybe I'd put the Heat a little bit higher, but are going to be tough to jump, which I think leaves us, KC, at the end of this exercise, where does that leave us with the Bulls in, you know, we're confident, you know, at this point, projecting them into the seventh or eighth spot, something like that. And, you know, maybe here's the thing. Not only has this offseason just started, going into this season, you know, if you looked at, I don't think I made an on record standings prediction in the East, but if you go back and look at anybody's, like, nobody pictured the Knicks getting to the fourth seed, even with the additions that the Hawks made. You know, the fifth seed, I think, maybe was exceeding expectations for them. Nobody would have picked the Celtics to go 500. Nobody would have picked the Heat to be in the sixth spot and not, you know, getting home court in a playoff series necessarily. So anything can change here, but I think that leaves us with the Bulls in the seventh or eighth spot and hoping that, you know, they can make some unpredictable type stuff happen to get into that top six range that I really, really think they need to get into to justify the investment that they made at the deadline and the investment that they may make, you know, during free agency or on, you know, the trade market further or anything like that.
Go team. After all that, we got the Bulls in eighth in 2021-22. So here we go. Obviously so much unknown still has to play out, but that was kind of a fun exercise running through the Eastern Conference.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
While we're talking playoffs, Rob and I made first-round predictions for the website at NBCSportsChicago.com. You can go back and look at how I crushed Rob in predictions, or I could just tell you that I went 3-1 in the East and Rob went 2-2 in the West. I'll break it down in that kind of format for you. But while we're here, and Tony, you can chime in here, we're going to break down the second round, which has started with the Nets taking a 1-0 lead as we're taping this with Game 2 tonight, Monday night, over the Bucks, and the Hawks somewhat surprisingly taking a 1-0 lead on the 76ers in pretty convincing fashion until a crazy ending. And then two great Western Conference series that one of them will tip Monday night in Suns Nuggets and Jazz Clippers as well. So I'm going to start. I have got the Jazz over the Clippers in six games. I have been a huge Jazz fan all season. I think they are getting totally undersold and overlooked. I know the Clippers have incredible star power and showed a lot of fortitude in withstanding the Mavericks after falling down. But between that defense, depth on offense, the different ways that they can beat you, obviously Conley's injury situation will be something to monitor. But I'm a big believer in the Jazz, and I've got them winning in six games. Tony?
I like the Jazz in this case. I had the Clippers beating Dallas, but I just don't trust anybody on that team other than Kawhi Leonard, and I barely trust him because his body is just – 60 years old. Even though we saw some glimpses in that Dallas series of greatness, which he is a great player, he's a future Hall of Famer. But still, like, I mean, you trust Paul George? I mean, you trust Reggie Jackson? Like, the rest of that roster is just so meh. So yeah, I'm going Jazz.
You're not a Luke Kennard believer after that game seven. Oh,
40 mil? In this house, we call him 40 mil. He doesn't even have a name.
40 mil, he's 64. Put some respect on Luke Kennard. 64 years, 64 mil. Yeah. In terms of my pick for this one, we all agree. Although I will say, Tony, to say like to brush off those Kawhi performances as
those were
all time. I mean, the 45 in game six, and then what do you have, 28, 10, and 9, and he guarded Luka for the majority of the game and did a great job. I mean, really, Luka, they got to get him some help, but he really wore down as that game went on. But Kawhi was phenomenal in each of those last two games. But I had Jazz in seven. I only do seven, not because I've mapped out each game in my head necessarily, but just because when I see a series as being close to a toss-up, I just put it in seven, and then I pick the team that I think has the slight edge. The only questions I would have from the Jazz perspective is who guards Kawhi, just in terms of that, you know, big wing size guy that they can kind of throw at him. I mean, you have Royce O'Neal or Bojan Bogdanovic or people like that, but I think Kawhi could have some gaudy stat lines in this series. Also, the Clippers are obviously a switch heavy team defensively, guarding pick and rolls. The Jazz's offense is pretty reliant on, you know, ball movement and player movement. We saw with the way that the Bulls struggled against switching this year that playing that brand of defense can bog that down. That being said, I don't think the Jazz are a team that, similar to Dallas, that you can kind of cut the head off the snake and, you know, just take one guy out of the equation and stifle an offense that way. They have so many different ways to hurt you. Obviously defensively, I just didn't see anything once Mitchell came back in that Grizzly series that would take me off the opinion that they were the best team in the West. They obviously were the best team in the West in the regular season. I thought that going into the playoffs too. So I just think when it's all said and done over a seven game sample, I see them having enough firepower to outlast the Clippers. And I just saw enough vulnerabilities and cracks in the Clippers in that Mavericks series that I don't feel, despite the top end talent level, I don't have too many reservations about picking against them, but I think this will be a great series. I think this will be very back and forth and go, you know, six or seven.
Being a great series, I think Suns Nuggets is going to be phenomenal. I also think the Suns have been overlooked a lot all season and undersold. Obviously Chris Paul's injury situation makes that a little bit dicier. And man, every time you watch the Nuggets, you're just impressed by how deep and how awesome, how fun that roster is. But you're also just wondering, oh, wouldn't it be great to see him at full strength? I mean, injuries stink so bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jamal Murray would be so fun in these playoffs. But you also look at the way that they've, you know, worked the buyout market and the trade deadline, adding Aaron Gordon and Austin Rivers, and those guys have both played huge roles. So I think this is going to be a fantastic series. Quite frankly, I actually did not break this down as much as I probably should have before I go on record with a prediction, because I think it's going to be really, really close. So I'm saying 7 games, but I'm going to pick the Suns, assuming that Chris Paul's health holds up, but I think it's going to go 7. Rob, we'll go to you next this time.
Yeah, I did Suns Nuggets in 6. I think Jokic is obviously going to be Jokic. Not only is he the MVP of the league, he's such a phenomenal playoff performer. I mean, he's just such a joy to watch. But I think, provided DeAndre Ayton can stay out of foul trouble, I actually think he's a decent option if you're going to go one-on-one against him. I mean, you know, there are no good options against a guy like Jokic, but you know, and I'm saying it's a big if with the foul trouble equation. I mean, Yusuf Nurkic knows that well from the Blazers Nuggets series of last round, but you know, also provided Chris Paul's health, I just think the Suns really showed me a lot in that last round. Like I said, I picked the Lakers in that first round series, but now that they've kind of cleared that hurdle, I think the Nuggets, you know, really pulled together well, despite their kind of thinned backcourt rotation, missing their, you know, basically their two starting guards and Jamal Murray and Will Barton. I think that finally catches up to them, but it's a competitive 6-game series that I see the Suns eventually pulling out.
Tony?
I like Phoenix, and I really, really like Denver, but injuries matter, man, and they're going to matter eventually. It's still weird that, and we see what happens with Portland, that Portland really couldn't take advantage of Capazzo starting games for the Denver Nuggets like they should have. Like, it was really, really weird that he didn't do that. I think Phoenix does that because Devin Booker isn't, you know, CJ McCollum, you know, or I mean, Damian Lillard obviously took advantage, but I think their pairing is a much better one that Denver is going to have to figure out. And I don't think they have enough. I mean, it's not even just a Jamal Murray thing. It's the, you know, Will Barton, you know, not being available. And who's that? Dozier. Like, they've had
Kansas City Bulls great PJ Dozier.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he was playing good minutes for Denver, and he's not available to them. So I think the injuries catch up with them in the series.
All right, we're going to move on to the East. As I mentioned earlier, the Hawks took a 1-0 lead on the 76ers with a fantastic performance. A little dicey ending, but fantastic performance. Bogdanovich is just huge for them. And obviously Trae Young is just playing at an elite level. So they're up 1-0. I'm going to have somebody else go first with a prediction on this one. Rob, we'll start with you this time.
Yeah, I actually jotted down my figuring we'd do something, whether it be in writing or podcast. I jotted down my Eastern Conference ones before the game ones happened. And I think game 2 and Nets Bucks will have happened by the time this airs. So those predictions, when we get to them, could look really bad. But I had Philly in 6 before that series started. I think I'll stick to that. Obviously, I actually didn't watch much until the end of this one. So I can't speak to how they looked when Atlanta seemed like they were kind of running them off the floor in the first half of that game. That's obviously not totally encouraging. But I still think, you know, with necessary adjustments, I know from reading up a little bit that kind of some of the lineup configurations that Doc was rolling with rolling out all bench units and things like that were a bit of a problem. Maybe he adjusts out of that. Embiid's final stat line, I know his mobility was probably a little bit limited, but his final stat line to me was pretty encouraging considering he was coming off that partially torn meniscus. So I still think, I mean, that was a great, great win by Atlanta. I mean, they really almost did everything they could to fumble it away at the end there. It's kind of a comedy of errors, but great win. I still think Philly pulls this one out in 6th. I mean, the top seed in the East for a reason, and their defensive personnel, I just think all that catches up to Atlanta eventually.
Tony?
I agree with Rob. I like Philly. I think Philly is going to the finals. But obviously the injury to
Embiid
kind of changes that a bit for me. But I do think they get out of this round, and it's because, like, I felt like I watched that game, and I felt like Doc just wanted to see what his individual backcourt defenders could do. There was no real kind of plan. I think he just kind of leaned on, I have the best backcourt defenders in the league, and we'll see how that goes in game 1, and then we'll adjust later. So I do plan on seeing an adjustment on trying to hamper Trae Young. They shot ridiculously from 3 that first game. It was crazy. Like, insane. I don't think that happens again with this team. So yeah, I like Philly. Okay, six. Oh, so six. They won the first one. I give them six. I was gonna say five, but six.
Well, we knowing how you feel about Embiid, we knew where you were going with your pick. So yeah, I have the Sixers as well. I just think they're the number one seed for a reason, as Rob said. I think defensively they're gonna figure it out. I think Tybalt will make more of an impact as the series moves along. So I've got the Sixers in six as well. So three alignments there. Last but not least, Nets Bucks, which will play the second game by the time this airs. We are taping it before game two. I got to be honest, man. I probably kind of downplayed the Nets all season because I don't have any problem with super teams, but this one just seems a little ickier than most. Just guys
getting together and
doing whatever they want to do, and then, you know, let's throw in Blake Griffin at the buyout market. You know, I just kind of not paid attention to the Nets as much as I probably should have, given how much incredible talent they have. And I remember texting with someone before game one, like, I think the Bucks can beat them. And then I watched game one and I texted the person back, like, I don't think the Bucks can beat them. And obviously the Milwaukee will shoot better as the series. We'd like to think they're going to shoot better as the series moves on than they did in game one. But, man, that's just, you know, you do that without Harden and that amount of talent and Durant playing at that level. I'm going to strongly disagree with Tony saying the Sixers are coming out of the East. I see the Nets coming out of the East, and pretty easily. I think the Nets are going to win this series in five games.
Wow. Wow. Big disagreement there. So I'll go next because of the stark contrast of our predictions there. Like I said, I made these picks before game one, so I'm not going to come off it. I had Bucks in seven before game one. I gotta stick to it. Casey, I do think they're going to shoot better. I think you're going to see better performances out of my guy Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday as the season goes along. I believe I'm looking at the box score right now. They've combined to shoot 13 of 42 in game one. I don't think that happens again. Obviously, as a Bucks and seven person, it's not encouraging to see James Harden go out in the first minute of the game and then for them to lose pretty handily, obviously down double digits late in that game. It's not necessarily a good thing, but I also think, you know, you got the best Blake Griffin game in who knows how long. Mike James, you know, I like Mike James. I like Mike James a lot. I don't know if he's having that type of game every game for the entire series. It was a gutsy win by Brooklyn. But I don't feel, you know, after watching that from a Milwaukee backer perspective, I wasn't totally deflated. And, you know, we'll see how the Harden thing plays out for the rest of the season. I believe he's already ruled out for game two. That hamstring obviously nagged him down the stretch of the season. And I mean, it would just be such a bummer if that was the thing for this, like, really heavyweight, like, series of the playoffs type series, if that was a deciding factor. But if he does miss more than a couple games here, I do think that would eventually catch up to Brooklyn. So, you know, the wind's out of my sails a little bit on being high on Milwaukee, but I'm still going to stick with that Bucks and seven pick. And this could look really bad by the time people listen to it tomorrow, because the Nets could be up 2-0 and everything could be. Chris Middleton could have had another, you know, 5 for 25, and like, you know, this pick could be a disaster. But I got to
say, I love when Rob and I disagree because it happens so infrequently. So Tony, you get to cast a deciding vote. Who you got in Nets Bucks?
You got to think, like, the Nets are just ruining everybody's basketball sensibilities, because it's like, you got to think team chemistry and like that stuff got to matter at some point. Like, we saw what happened to the Clippers where it mattered and then they failed. But at some point, it's just like the top end talent is just performing at like too great of a level where maybe team chemistry doesn't really matter all that well when you got two elite scorers acting elitely. So I just can't throw all of my basketball sensibilities away. So I think I'm going to go Bucks in this series, and I think it's going to go seven because, like, Mike James, like, is he going to do that again? Like, you know, the only Mike James I acknowledge is the one that played for, you know, the Timberwolves and the Rockets. That's the only Mike James.
And the Bulls.
Mike James played for the
Bulls. He played for the Bulls. Yeah.
Really? I did not know that.
Yeah.
I used to pick him all the time.
Mike James, this Mike James was a bona fide superstar in Europe, though. So this Mike James is legit. Like, I'm not trying to disrespect Mike James, but I do agree with your overall point there. Right.
But, I mean, I think you see the same issues with Giannis. Like, if those other players, Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday, if they don't have it going and they got to depend on Giannis, Giannis isn't a scorer. He's a catch and move guy and more of a transition guy. But it's different. You see the stark differences between what kind of superstar Kevin Durant is and the kind that Giannis is. But I still got to go with the Bucks on this one. Like, it's just out of the Nets are ruining all of my basketball thoughts in terms of everything that is supposed to be a team.
Underrated loss for Milwaukee too is DiVincenzo. I forgot to bring him up, but I still think defensive personnel wise, I think they'll figure it out. We'll see. I don't know if you feel good or bad, Tony, about being in your corner on this one, but
I agree that DiVincenzo is a big loss, but Brent Forbes has led more playing time for him, and he's had a decent playoffs. He didn't play great in game one, but he
defensively it's a little bit of an issue. Against a team like Brooklyn, who isn't going to have defensive issues, but yeah.
All right. So we'll wrap it up there. And Tony, make sure to cut and paste that tape for when the Nets win in five and we run tape the Bulls Talk podcast after the conclusion of the series. And I want that to be our lead in for that episode. So until then, I'm Casey Johnson. Thanks to Tony Gill and Rob Schaefer. And thank you for listening to the Bulls Talk podcast. We'll catch you next time. We hope you enjoyed the Bulls Talk podcast presented by Coors Light. Find us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Subscribe if you like the show. Feel free to rate and review us. New episodes are ready every Tuesday and Friday morning.